It's another beautiful Sunday afternoon. This is Rami Mayans. Welcome. My name is Ebuka Obiuchi, and thanks a lot for joining us. Today, we're going to be talking about something that I know a lot of you Nigerians can relate with. I'm talking electricity, power, or the lack of it. What's going on? What's the situation of things? Why are we still where we are? What's happening going forward?
Big terms like privatization, recapitalization, infrastructural upgrade are thrown around quite often in the power sector. But what really is required is action. Isn't it? On Robin Minds, we address all the problems bedeviling the power sector, speak on a few strategies to revamp. This is a specialized conversation on electricity. To kickstart the conversation, Ebuka Obi-Uchendu chats with public affairs analyst Ayo Bankole on Robin Minds.
I have you with me, a public analyst who definitely knows a lot about this. Ayo Bankole, thanks for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
So we are at least, I want to believe, about 7-8 years since the privatization. I do that because a lot of people are not sure what exactly happened with our substations being privatized and this different sort of the generation and distribution and all of that being privatized. Why are we still having this conversation almost a decade later?
So there's a lot of dynamics to the power issues in Nigeria. And as you said, there are different issues across the value chain. So even though we had a sort of full privatization on the distribution end, we never really concluded on the privatization of the GenCos, that's the generation side. And then the transmission side, it still sits with the government.
Yes.
So, and the inefficiencies and the wastages happen across the value chain. So we have installed generation capacity of about 12,500, right? But we lose 56% of that. So we're only able to generate about 4,000 or 4,005 or 5,000, right? So there's 56% wastage on that end. On the transmission side, there is total, of course, naturally, you know, government, you know, and mismanagement. So they're unable to manage that. So there's another wastage on that end. Now, on the distribution side, what ends at distribution is usually about 3,000 to 3,005. And at the distribution end, per time, they're only able to distribute about 1,500. So until when we have a full deregulation, a full liberalization of that industry. And then there's also the regulation side, there's the national grid side. So no matter how much you're even able to generate, the national grid is only able to manage 5,600 per time. So those inefficiencies are holistic, and you just have to be able to have the political will to drive it all the way down to the end, not just all this facelift of changing names, the unbundling. There has to be a systemic liberalization and changing and transformation of that industry to really get the results that we want.
So I get the impression from what you're saying that the wrong end of the value chain was privatized, because transmission seems to be the key to all of this, and government still seems to hold on to it. Why did government refuse to, I mean, even the generation side, even if it was bungled at some point, why is transmission still in the hands of government, and why is that important?
Okay, so it's not that the wrong end was privatized. It's just that the privatization was not fully done, and it wasn't done properly, right? So government wants to manage transmission, you know, because they believe that that is the end that controls the two end of the chain, right? But then that is the spinal cord, right? So you can't leave the spinal cord in the hands of the most inefficient ecosystem in the economy and expect to get results. So now, for you to drive, for transformation that you expect privatization to achieve to really yield the desired results, you have to drive that change across the value chain. So you have large enterprises all over the world that invest in the generation end of power. Even in Nigeria, you have quite a number. And, you know, the previous administration had gone through it halfway, right? But you know, political undertones and all that. So everything has been sort of bungled, right? So government needs to set aside political dimensions and do a thorough assessment of who has the capability to manage, you know, power in this type of environment. Because now look at what telecommunication liberalization alone did. Look at the wealth that is generated. Now imagine how much power, how much wealth can be generated using power. And it's so bad that it affects everything that we do economic-wise. And I'll give you an example because I'm an SME person. 25% of all the SMEs in Nigeria spend more than about 30% or more on power costs as part of their startup costs. That's already about one-third of the total amount you're using to enter business. So if you are able to solve this issue, you would have created wealth across different levels, different strata of the economy, and overall, the country is going to do better. So, I mean, we just have to...
We're going to be talking about the SMEs and all of that much later in the show with a few other guests. But I want to talk about the government now, because we all seem to know what the issues are. Yeah. You've outlined them here. A lot of people were excited when the current Minister of Power was put in there. He's also sort of laid out a lot of these things which you say, we know what the issues are. Why is there not that translation to put this in motion? I mean, like you said, the last government, as much as they might not have done things the right way, people at least something was done differently. Why is it taking so long? I mean, we're in our fifth to sixth year of this government. Why does it seem like nothing new has come into that sector?
So we won't say nothing new, you know, absolutely. But I think what you're trying to say is, why has there not been measurable change? I've listened to Fashola himself speak a number of times at the Economic Summit and, you know, other fora, and he keeps hammering on these sentiments that there are vested interests. And, you know, just as Sanusi Lamido said, with vested interest, you keep driving initiatives, you keep pushing initiatives, but you never get the result. Because the guys who are supposed to implement all of your changes, or the regulators, the legislators who are supposed to drive changes from a regulatory standpoint, because there are lots of regulations guiding power also that stifle growth, that stifle, you know, investment. So all of this end of the chain there has to be the political will to break the grip of those who have vested interest in all of these sectors. There are people who will not benefit if we begin to have power. There are people who will not benefit if laws are changed. So this system is such that the corrupt system has held on to different
layers. You really used the word I was trying to get
at. so corruption has held on to different layers of the system. You know, and again, quoting the same minister, if you even go through the process of the privatization, a lot of assets were sold to companies that clearly had no capacity to manage those assets or to manage, you know, power. So if you do not have a very solid political will to neutralize those vested interests, you know, those corrupt elements and power blocks, and then drive the change to the end. In fact, you are just managing the process.
So are you saying this is an issue that must be tackled from the top, not even a minister issue now?
No, of course. It has to be. I honestly do not know why we should have a president who would be minister of petroleum. What are you minister of petroleum for, right? When your biggest priority issues are power, education, healthcare, why are you being the minister? It simply means that our priorities are not still, it's business as usual. We still want to sit with the money that is coming from oil and gas. We're not interested in creating alternative sources of wealth.
Let's talk about independent power projects, because those got Nigerians quite excited when that started happening, when licenses were being issued here and there. There was this whole, we don't all have to depend on PHCN at the time, you know, before the discos took over. What happened with those, and why did they suddenly get not so exciting?
I think I recall that Asiwaju Tinubu was one of those who started the IPP project in Lagos then, and a lot of people got excited. One of the things that killed or that sort of made the noise go down is the national grid issue, right? You can't build an independent power, you know, plant or project with billions of naira, and then you are connecting to the national grid. And at the end of the day, the national grid has limited capability, right? So at the end of the day, whatever effort you've put in place is subjected to the inefficiencies of the national grid. So why not, you know, allow the IPPs run as independent off-grid solution providers. So wherever catchment areas that they are operating at, they don't have to be dependent. You don't have to subject them to your national grid ecosystem. So if I have my IPP within Lekki environment, right, let me be able to provide
service Lekki
exactly to all the guys in Lekki and without having to bother about the national grid.
Why is that? Why is the national grid, why is that a law? Is that like, and how do we start that conversation? Is it a legislation that needs to happen?
Yes, it is a legislation. And again, the regulatory bottlenecks around power, they are very complicated, you know, but that's just one summary of it. The only guys who are able to, and government knows that you need off-grid solutions. And I'll give you an example why I said government knows. There was an initiative that was started in 2015, right? It's called the Energizing Economies Initiative, EEI. And the plan that RWE had was to provide power, or, you know, clean power to about 100,000, you know, small businesses, right? And they had continued running that. All of a sudden, there's a pause because the DG or the MD of the RWE was changed. So if government knows that the solutions to these things is alternative off-grid power, then we then need the political will to provide the legislation and allow people who understand the business run it, right? Because without that legislation, or without you allowing people to run things outside of the national grid, we're never going to get the results.
Are you saying that capital money isn't the biggest problem with power?
No, capital isn't the biggest problem. There are people who have the money. There are local players, big guys in the oil and gas system, in the oil and gas value chain, who are ready to, you know, invest in power because it helps their business, right? There's a lot of gas that they're flaring. They could as well just divert it to generating power, right? There are global players who can come into this market because there's a huge demand, right? Nigeria's electricity demand is about 90,000 megawatts, right? So there's
the 90.
Yeah, 90, right? At the minimum, because
And we're at 4?
We're at about 4,000.
Okay, just wanted to be clear with that.
So you can see that the gap is huge. So there is no real investor that wouldn't want to come in once they know that the legislation is right, the political will is right, the system is clean and ready to allow them in. So money is not the problem. In fact, we have the money. The problem is we do not provide the enabling environment and we do not have the political will.
Yeah. You mentioned there about the national grid, and a lot of people, I mean, I know a lot of people have had that conversation where whatever it is, everything has to be pulled in. Even state governments have complained because some state governments wanted to do that on their own outside of private investments. Why then does it seem like, because sometimes you see people put on social media, we've not had light for it's weeks or whatever it is, and some other people have power. Is it so? How then is the distribution not as even? I'm speaking as a layman now. Everybody pulls power into the national grid. Why isn't that also felt across board?
Yeah, so again, as I said, there are different layers of complexity, but yes. I'll simplify it. So first and foremost, 48% of Nigerians do not have access to electricity at all. So that's on one side. Now, amongst those who have, you know, access to electricity, because of the wastages along different lines that I've explained, what you are able to distribute at the end of the day is less than 2,000 or 3,000, right? Now, amongst those guys, there is a product that the discos and these guys call premium electricity. You know, there are different types of products. So the guys who are on the premium side, so for example, you live in service apartments in Lekki and all of that, you have about 24 hours electricity, or you have 12 hours, 6 hours, depends on the product that you're on. So those guys get more power. There are those, and they pay more. There are those who maybe you live wherever you live, and you do not particularly even have the financial wherewithal to pay so much, or you owe, or you bypass, those kind of things, right? You're not going to, you may not have necessarily have access to a lot of light. But there's also the corruption element. There are people who connect, there are certain lines that are seen as priority lines, right? So maybe a big man lives here, or the MD of a company lives here, those kind of things, and then you provide them with additional power because, so, and those...
So your neighbor matters.
Your neighbor matters, and those types of access, right, affects supply to other environments, right? But irrespective, our capacity, our generation and distribution capacity, at the end of the day, irrespective, on the average, is just about 3 hours of electricity per day.
Wow. Before we get to, you know, solutions and how we want to move forward, something you mentioned that I know government has talked a lot about is, you know, this whole talk about bypassing illegal connections and all of that. Do you get a sense that Nigerians don't take enough responsibility for their actions? We have people who owe bills for years on end and never want to pay. People don't even want meters because they know that getting a meter means they have to be, you know, stuck with actually paying these bills. Do we take enough responsibility, you think?
Nigerians do not take enough responsibility, but whose fault is that? I mean, that's the whole idea of the state. That's why the government was formulated, right? All the theories of state, or Bayesian theory of nature says that theory of state says that every individual by nature is nasty and brutish and lawless, right? So if the system, the value, our entire value system, which ideally should be driven by the government, is already weak, right? So, and again, don't forget that it is a contract. So the people expect that if I'm able to pay taxes or levies, and I don't like people saying Nigerians don't pay taxes. Nigerians pay taxes. It's just that a lot of them pay informal taxes in forms of levies to the government, and these things get cleaned out. For example, the Danfo guys pay a lot of taxes on a daily basis.
It's very heavy.
Right? Yeah, you know, this woman in the store and all that. So if I pay all of these things every day, and then I still don't get light, and then my road is bad, and then my kids can't go to good school, I'm not motivated to want to pay, you know, power bills. So I would look for another way to bypass it, especially if I now see that the DISCO is cheating me, right? So the entire is a value system problem. It's not so much about do Nigerians take responsibility or not. The problem is why should an average Nigerian want to take responsibility?
Yeah. You know, there's no incentive.
Exactly, there's no incentive. So that's what the problem is. Yes, we do not take sufficient responsibility. We like to cut corners, but then, you know, we can only be as good as the system that we've created for ourselves.
So on the final note now, looking at the way this government is set up, looking at, we have about 2-3 years, I want to believe, to go. Do you see signs that things are going to change? Let me use your word now. Do you think there's going to be a change or changes witnessed in this sector anytime soon?
It's not my word. It's the word of the APC. I mean, they were the ones that came up with the change mantra. But I don't see anything changing in 3 years. I like to stick to results. I'm a strategy person and I focus on key results. If you look at healthcare, we've not had it better. I don't see how it's going to change in 3 years if it hasn't changed in 5 years. If you look at, for example, you still have all our major leaders traveling here and there for healthcare. Primary healthcare is not better. Secondary, tertiary is not better. So if you look at road infrastructure, quite a lot is going on there. But Nigerians have the rate of road traffic accidents and all of that is still not, it hasn't dropped, and Nigerians are still not comfortable, right? If you look at the same thing across all parameters, education especially has been ignored. You still have consistent strikes. Power, we just analyzed it, is not going to get better.
But they made promises of, I think, 12,000 megawatts or something.
Okay, so now we've analyzed it. We have an installed generation capacity of 12,500 megawatts already, right? The issue is, are we going to get 12,000 in our homes? So that's the issue. So it's not about the fancy.
So it's still the transmission.
Exactly. So it's still the transmission and, you know, the distribution, you know, the end-to-end transformation of that system. So it's not going to get better. I don't see, except by a stroke of miracle, I don't see us improving significantly in the next 3 years. I mean, that's not going to happen because look at what happened with NDDC. It's business as usual. You know, the guys go to work, they allocate monies, you know, they share it. They look at EFCC too, even this EFCC squad. So I don't see any magic that's going to happen in the next 3 years.
Okay, sometimes we like to end on an optimistic note, but sometimes being realistic, I think, works. Exactly. So thanks for being here today. Ayan.
Thank you so much for having
me. We'll take
a
quick break now and we'll be right back. Please stay with us. You move, really wanna get with you. Don't just stand there teasing me.